This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Jason Moss, Senior VP EMEA at COPTIA, and Zeshan Satta, who's a Senior Director for Learning and Skills, also at COPTIA. Gentlemen, good morning. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Good morning. My name is Zeshan Satta. I am the Senior Director for Learning and Skills. I also have responsibility for our certification programs in various guises. I've been with CompTIA since 2015 and absolutely dedicated to the mission for us to get more people into the tech industry.
I'm Jason Moss. I'm the Senior Vice President of Europe, Middle East and Africa. I have a team based here in the UK who look after the UK and Western Europe. I have a team based in the DACH region looking after Central and Eastern Europe, a team based in Middle East and North Africa, based in Saudi, in the UAE and in Egypt looking after that region, and then a team based in Kenya and South Africa looking after the Sub-Sahara Africa region. I've been at CompTIA for 6 months. Prior to that, I've been a CompTIA partner for 25 years. I've been CEO and managing director of numerous training businesses before, and I've gone from that side of the fence to now being on the CompTIA side.
Training has always been a big business. But one of the problems with training is making it relevant to an employer. If we look at traditional educational training, changing a syllabus takes us 7, 8, 9 years by the time we've tested it, proven it, and got the first cohort out the door. With technology, we don't have that time. We've got to react quickly. How much pressure is there on you to be looking at new products coming to market, and particularly things like ChatGPT and generative AI at the moment, and making sure that you can adapt quickly but accurately with training materials that actually mean something to an employer as well as somebody doing the training?
It's a hard question. CompTIA is an association, that's our roots. Our members, which are from corporates, large and small from around the world, input into our certification and guide us in the right way. We get subject experts from across the industry and get their insight to say, where is this industry heading, where is this particular job role heading, and what are the skills and knowledge to get to them. Once we have that insight, we're able to build our certification programs. Essentially, that helps us to ensure that what the person needs as the job role, they're getting it quicker and faster. However, like you mentioned, it is a long cycle. Our certifications have a 3-year cycle before they're refreshed, where someone does a certification, then they have to do the certification again or do the next level up. We're pushing not just the idea of you've done the learning and take it, we also instill continuous education and making sure you're upskilled and keep on reskilling for your needs.
Zeshan hits the nail on the head. Those subject matter experts, the people from industry doing the job for real, they're the people that help us to write the exams. They go into a bunker in Chicago, a whole bunch of them, and it's very secure lockdown in terms of the privacy of it, just make sure the integrity of the exam is maintained. They build the content, they build the exams. It has to be relevant. Back to your point of, I'm going to go and do this for real in a workplace. I need to know what I'm doing and be able to do this and competently do it as well, not just I've read a book somewhere. That's really crucial. CompTIA has a large research function, and that's looking at job roles. It's looking at the skills that are required. It's looking at the competencies, the knowledge, the behaviours that are involved in those jobs as well. From around the world, it collates that information. It's looking at emerging technologies. It's looking at where things are going. Trying to future-proof them. Back to the point around the 3-year cycle, we want to make sure that even if I get the certification now, over the next 3 years, it's future-gazing as well, the certifications, so that the skills that I've got are still relevant, regardless of the fact I'm taking it now. But clearly that 3-year cycle is also important to rewriting it.
A 3-year cycle seems in some cases to be short. If we think about the basics of network management, things don't change much in a 3-year cycle. A lot of the lower level courses and exams are foundational. Nobody wants to be investing in a 4-5 year project to build themselves towards something and find that halfway through they've got to go back and redo early points. How do you split up what needs to be recertified with what doesn't need to be recertified?
I'd be shocked if people are recertifying the same thing again and again. And I tend to tell people to move to the next level. Let's take the CompTIA cybersecurity stack for a second. We've got the Network Plus, where you get all the network fundamentals. But when you move up to the Security Plus, what we expect people to do is be able to recall the information or know the information that's in the Network Plus. So you're not really learning that again. We will ask you questions about, here's your enterprise network, you've got to do something about it. But we're not reteaching networking protocols, you expect to know those bits already. As you go through the CompTIA cybersecurity pathway, every single certification builds upon each other. what we go back to is looking on what's important to the job role and adding to it. For example, you need that networking fundamentals at a very early career stage, but you don't need that as a senior SOC analyst. That's the sort of stuff you should already know. We look at the job role versus just the knowledge.
But those job roles are constantly in flux. If we look at what was a SOC 1 analyst a few years ago, in a number of companies, SOC 1 doesn't exist. We started to see that replaced by machine learning and fully automated solutions. So people coming in as a level 2 SOC analyst, there's an assumption of understanding and knowledge they will have, but there's a lot of employers not giving them that knowledge. They're expected to go out and find industry certifications. How do you keep on top of that shifting requirement for a job?
Just mentioned earlier about the whole research piece, etc. We also have a Cybersecurity Certification Council. This is made up of individuals from across the industry who give us a bit of a guiding light of this is where the job role has changed. So they almost sit above the subject matter experts. We mentioned SOC analysts. A lot of SOC analysts are now doing a lot more threat hunting. Within our current CYSA Plus certification, where we've now incorporated using threat hunting as key part of the job role. We are able to understand quickly what's required for the particular job role. And you're quite right, that automation is burning off a lot of jobs. It's kind of scary. But if I go back to our previous CYSA exam, 002 version, that was very much that junior security analyst, maybe 2 to 3 years experience. The current one is for that intermediate advanced security analyst, 3 to 4 years experience. We're asking people to do a big jump between Security Plus and our CYSA exam. We're now doing a lot more practical exercises within our certifications. We expect people to not just regurgitate information knowledge, it's go and do it.
That's crucial, isn't it? It's about skills. I was asked once, what is a skill? And a skill clearly is something you can do, and you can do it to a really great level as well. It's not just knowing something. I can go and apply it, do it, put it into practice for real. And all the qualifications that we have, all the certifications that we've got, there's a really large element of that practical element to them. As Ethan rightly mentioned, that job task analysis that's done in order to make sure that the skills we're going to be teaching within that certification are mapped really well to the specific job you're going to be doing. It's so important. You mentioned the automation piece. And in one way, people think that a threat to jobs is going to automate a bunch of stuff and remove jobs. But how I think of it is, let's take out the mundane, let's take out the day-to-day stuff, the stuff that the computers can handle, let's let it do that. And let's free up people to do the higher level stuff, the more important stuff. Automation is a really great tool to be able to free up your people so they can spend time doing the right things as opposed to those mundane things that the computers can handle on their behalf.
One of the challenges that automation brings us is, yes, we can remove mundane tasks, but we've now got to move people from those roles into new roles. There's a lot of employees out there who see automation as making them redundant. There's a lot of pretty poor employers out there at the same time who see this as cutting headcount, not giving people a better role or moving people through the organisation. They're really poor employers because they lose all of that knowledge of the organisation, all that subject matter knowledge that those individuals have by discarding them for a little bit of automation. When you engage with enterprises and you start to talk to them about what they want, what makes sense for them, what does training mean to them and their staff, how many of them are beginning to recognize that training has to be continuous, not just push back on employees to pay for and buy and read a book as it was in the 90s and the 2000s, that employers have to engage and employers have to actually say, I want to take that knowledge, that skill that person has, elevate it and advance my business. Are you seeing that level of awareness?
We are, more so recently than perhaps in previous years. This is a message that I've kind of banged on about for the last 3 or 4 years. We've seen specific examples where on the ground floor, this organization is making cutbacks, redundancies. People are going to self-serve or they're using automation and therefore those jobs are no longer required. Yet the floor above them within the same organization can't hire people quickly enough. And they're out there trying to find brand new people to their organisation. And one of the messages I've always drummed for the last 4 or 5 years at least has been, how do we recertify those people? How do we reskill those people? I remember a saying from PwC, we can't protect jobs, but we can protect people. I really love that saying because those people on that ground floor, as you mentioned, they're already in the company ethos, the values, they've been loyal employees, done a great job for us. They're halfway there, but they're just lacking on some of these other skills. why take a gamble on taking somebody brand new from outside your organization and bringing them in when you've got this ready-made person over here who just needs upskilling or reskilling in a new area? Surely that's got to be far more cost-effective. And more importantly, surely it's the right thing to do by that person who's been a loyal employee for perhaps several years in your business.
You'd think so.
You'd think so. And that's the conversation we have when we're out with employers. These are the conversations we're having with them. Sometimes they've thought about it. If they haven't, they then do start thinking about it. And how do programs like this, or apprenticeship schemes, or bootcamp schemes, or other government-funded programs as well, how can they help us to do that and to achieve that and to reskill those people?
Everything said, I agree with. But the other bit I'm getting from employers nowadays is this whole idea of compliance with different frameworks. You've got NIS2 coming out very soon. You've got the DoD 8140. You've got the UK government's GSP framework. All these frameworks are coming out. It's a clear need for skills. What I love within these frameworks, they say, right, you must be able to do this. You must have this knowledge. You must exhibit these behaviors. They're being very bold and brushing. And here are some qualifications, certifications that will help you build those skills. So already gives the employers a bit of wake-up call. And they don't have to say, oh, well, I can just do a skill scan and tick, tick, they have those knowledge and skills. Do they really have them? Are they compliant to the DoD's 8140? Do they have the same as a cybersecurity consultant within the UK government? That is helping us to change the narrative and getting the employers on board. Yes, those employers will always exist that say, hey, there's the book. Oh, you can just YouTube it. Like, no, because if you look at threat hunting in YouTube, you'll be there for hours before you find anything useful. Using a CompTIA certification, curriculum and learning, what you've done is distilled all the stuff that you don't know and you can focus on stuff that you need to know.
How many employers see training as part of a journey? When I owned my training company in the 80s, I did some work with a large brewery. On every 1 week course, we had a senior director, a senior secretary, and then people from across the business. At the end of the first course, the director walked up to me and said, we've always sent people away for training and assumed they'd come back and be productive. I now recognize that it's going to take my staff time to be productive. You've given them some tools, but they've got to understand that. That mentality, however, of send somebody on a course and they're productive the moment they walk back, still persists. How do we break that down to make employers understand that this is just part of a journey? You can give somebody tools, that doesn't mean to say they're going to go out and build a mansion just because you've shown them how to use a saw and a hammer.
Once someone gets onto a CompTIA course, whether they're doing it online or in person, whatever, here are the assisted labs, the stuff you would have done, monkey see, monkey do. But then you have the applied labs, and those are basically tests. If you really understood the assisted labs, can you then apply them to an unfamiliar situation? What we recommend is you only do those labs when you're ready. It becomes the training provider and the employer working hand in hand in conjunction together to say, okay, when your employee is ready, get them to start doing the applied labs, because that's when you'll see the actual output and outcomes of the learning they've experienced.
I'd add to that. If you think about the Ofsted framework, when you were looking to implement some training in your organisation, what was your initial intent that you were looking for? How did you go and implement it? But then that third question, which is your question, the impact. How do I measure the impact? They've been on this training, now they're back. What can they do now that they couldn't do before? What are they better at doing? And that kind of ROI, that kind of measure of how do I know that what I've just done was worthwhile and therefore I should continue to do it. And that's where training organisations and employers really have to work hand in hand with the learner as well. It's almost a three-way conversation between the learner, their line manager or employer, and the training organisation to go, okay, we wanted to know this, we learnt that. Now, can you do these things? In some ways, that might be where the apprenticeship model is really quite fantastic. With the apprenticeship model, you have a mentor in your organization. You also have your mentor within your training provider. Between those, when you're meeting as a three, these are the kind of conversations you're having pretty much every month. We said we were going to do this. You've done it. What's the impact? What can you now do, etc.? And it's all about competence. How competent am I at doing those things compared to what I was before?
You talked there about applied labs, the ability to go and do more beyond the course. One of the things that I've been critical of yourselves of is there's no natural route from yourselves into things like hack the box, particularly on the cybersecurity side. And it is there. I've obviously missed it, but I have looked for it and I've asked the question. Things like hack the box and other similar competitions are seen almost as table stakes if you want to move through and understand what you're doing in those areas. So how do you either incorporate that and make that part of your program? Or how do you build your own CTFs that are going to engage people?
I'm going to take that one because you've hit a nerve, Ed. I'm actually a big fan of TrackMe. I found TrackMe when they were absolutely nothing and I was their first customer. How I was their first customer, CompTIA run a program called Cyber Ready, and that's a 6-month initiative to get people with some IT experience. They could be working on the help desk, they could be an IT degree, could be a former IT apprentice, whatever. Through a 6-month period, through a managed flip class approach, they gain the knowledge, skills, and certifications to access cybersecurity analyst job role. We give them all the materials, so the CompTIA Cert Master, the CompTIA Cert Master Labs, the CompTIA Cert Master Practice. So they literally get the entire CompTIA suite. Once a month on a Saturday, they come in for a workshop, they hear an industry guest speaker, they take technical master classes, they do a bit of CTF exercises using TrackMe. I'll tell you how that evolves. Month 3, Security Plus. Month 6, CYSA Plus. Now, you're right. There is this case of things like TrackMe and HackerBox and Mercer Labs, etc. They all are seen as gold standard in the cyber industry of how to gain the skills and continue upskilling. We have our labs, fantastic. But then within Cyber Ready, our final workshop is War Games. It's a case of, yes, you've learned all the skills in Security Plus and CYSA Plus. Now apply your knowledge in an unfamiliar situation by carrying out blue team, red team challenges in small groups. That's what you don't get when you do Hack the Box or TrackMe individually, because you're an individual sitting there and not getting the communication skills. Whilst I like those platforms, they've suffered the fact of you haven't got people working together to respond to an incident, which happens in the real world, and that's what we're able to do that with a Cyber Ready program. In the future, watch this space.
I like that, watch this space. A lot of the veterans I spend time with form teams to take part in competitions. They don't see this as a one-off. Yes, if you want to do a bit of work on your own skills, one-off. But they'd much rather work in teams. They'd much rather work at how they do this and take on other teams. There's a winning element, but it's as much a teamwork element. How do we foster that teamwork element within organisations around cybersecurity and other tech training? Because although we're talking cybersecurity here, I'd argue as we start to move around generative AI, as we start to enhance what we were doing with machine learning 5-7 years ago into what we now see as large language models for Gen AI, as we look at more detailed analytics, none of these are one and done. These are not one individual. These are supposed to be teamwork exercises. But many employers don't see teamwork exercises as being important. They see them as sucking up a lot of time and taking a lot of people out. How do you change the practical elements, or how do you bring into your practical elements much more teamwork-based training?
Before we even talk about what CompTIA we could potentially do in that space, I'm a big fan of establishing a good learning culture. If an organization is go read a book and the tick in the box, you know, will give you a champagne or whatever, that's not enough. Establishing a good learning culture is absolutely critical. Once you've got that, the sky's your limit. We are engaging as CompTIA with all our members and saying, okay, how can we bring in the whole teamwork element across the learning space, where I have set up some granular modules of learning, and that's going to also include things like teamwork, things like durable skills, so communication, practical exercise and whatnot. And once we have that, we'll be able to expand our entire portfolio to allow teams to find where their weaknesses are and make them their strengths.
I agree with everything Zeeshan said. I remember doing this 10, 15 years ago as a CEO of a business, and calling up the IT team at 7 a.m. and saying, there's been a fire at head office. This has happened. Go. And the whole IT team had to spend the next 12, 14 hours rebuilding servers, recovering from backups, trying to get certain parts of the business up and running as quickly as it possibly could so we could still continue to function. I remember the IT team one hand thanking me. This was amazing because we learned so much from doing it. On the other hand, wanting to strangle me because, you know, why did you do this? And it's my daughter's birthday today or whatever. This is when these things happen, I guess. It's so crucial to have those environments where the leaders of those organizations that you're talking about really believe in training, but also really believe this might happen to us for real someday. And the best way to be ready for it is to have gone through some kind of simulation or practice where we've gone through a whole process, because you can write up a process about if this happens, go do these things. But everyone knows there'll be a bunch of holes in there, and the time you try and implement it, that's when you learn the most. most recent company I was at before I joined CompTIA, we did the same thing. And it took us the whole day. We worked through everything. Afterwards, you almost rip up the process and start over and rewrite it. This is what happened for real. You know, having those people in place, those people who play certain roles and certain positions as well, knowing what they are, knowing what their responsibility is, what they bring to the team. You can only do that by doing it for real.
One of my soapbox moments for several years now has been that when companies do their recovery exercises, they only ever use internal people, and only those who can be spared. They never engage their reputation management external advisors or their external PR agencies or a whole bunch of people who are not inside the company as part of this. So yes, I agree with you. There's a lot of failings in this that we need to address. But I'd like to come back to that lifelong learning component. You bought Test Out earlier this year, which gave you a lot more visibility into education at a much earlier level. We know that one of our challenges is getting technology into a much earlier level, and today's announcement is about you pushing your awards, your certifications, and your courses down through Test Out to those groups. We also know, however, that education is expensive. We're seeing increasing numbers of research reports suggesting that people can't earn the salaries they need to pay off the debt they incur by the time they finish university. By starting with a younger market, do you see an easier way to give people the foundational skills to move them through to higher paying jobs as they go through education to recover that educational debt? And if so, where do you see those benefits coming and how long will we wait?
That's a real big question. With Test Out in the US and the academic market, they work with thousands of schools and school districts across the US to get this into that kind of high school audience. Something that perhaps the UK is a little bit behind on with the Test Out acquisition, we can look to try and expedite that and do something about it. One of my main concerns is people getting switched off from IT at that young age, when they take their options, for instance, at year 9. Already at that point, they've switched off from technology and gone down another pathway. What we want to do is make sure that we encourage them into these types of careers early on, so they don't switch off the option to move into a career in tech, as an example. In the Test Out product, we have the Microsoft Office suite. So everyone, regardless of their job role, maybe they don't want to work in tech, but if they're working in an environment where they might be using Word or Excel or PowerPoint, etc., it's really crucial to have those skills. But also our IT Fundamentals product that's in there as well, the digital literacy product, is one where, again, we're looking at careers, we're examining careers that people could go on, the kind of skills that you need, and we're also introducing them to all sorts of areas of tech. Zeeshan uses the word buffet. It's a buffet where you get to try all sorts of things before you then decide where you want to go and specialize and spend your time. To get that into the academic audience is crucial. Last week I was in Saudi Arabia. I was in an academy where they were predominantly aimed at people aged 18 and upwards. But in the afternoon, they said, watch what happens now. And a bunch of these school kids came in. They were between the years of kind of 10 to 12 years old. They can come in, they can play, they can use the labs, they can use our content. They can start getting switched on to technology at an earlier age. And this was voluntary, by the way. They didn't have to do this stuff. But those people became the students of the future for them as well. I thought that was really amazing to see.
The only thing I'm going to add to that is the good thing about my role is I talk to a lot of governments about what their plans are. I was quite instrumental in creating the digital T-level in the UK. Essentially, what we did was to align it to industry best practice. And the industry best practice got aligned to the CompTIA certification objectives. What that meant is, as we're going to get more new talent coming through the T-levels, they're going to get the job-ready skills that they need. And we'll be looking at our Test Out product to be integrated across those different courses. So your question about when we're going to get them, well, hopefully, you know, once they've done their schooling, their T-levels, at 18, if we can get them into an IT or cyber job role, I'll be very happy.
How do we engage the lost people from schooling? I grew up on a council estate. I spent a lot of my latter years absent from school because I was bored. I knew I could get the certifications I required to join the Royal Marines. I look around today, I see an awful lot of kids being excluded. Many of those have really good tech skills, but they are then excluded from the job market because they don't have certifications. The education system struggles to engage them. As you work with Test Out, as you work to push your certifications down, how do you begin to find, engage, and work with them to make them productive, to give them a route other than that of cybercrime?
You have to work with what you've got at the end there. You mentioned cybercrime. We've talked to the ROCUs, the Regional Organized Crime Units, who have the PREVENT program. What we've done in some cases is, because the ROCU separated around the country, I think there's 7 of them, some have taken the CompTIA content and started giving away free to the people that they identify as, you know, they need help before they go and do something too bad, because if they're downloading something and whatever, so they're literally knocking on the door and say, hello, let's have a conversation, and then let's give you something that's going to keep you occupied. So that's one thing that we like to work with the regional organized crime units with. In terms of the lost generation, they don't know what they don't know. There's a lot of work, and not just for CompTIA, but every single organization in the tech industry to kind of step up and say, okay, right, we have an issue of all these different people, you know, and I'm not just talking about the people from the council states. What we haven't even touched upon is the lack of females in tech and cyber. That's another issue there. We've got to empower these different groups of people and say, right, here's some content. Look at it. Does it interest you? And from there, okay, let's now talk about if you're good at it, you like it. Yeah, that could be something you do as a job, but we have to open that door first and hopefully they'll walk through it.
And I couldn't agree more with that. The government has all sorts of issues around these needs. You know, they're not in education, employment or training. We try and sign up to those as well. So we try and play our part in them. When we're talking to employers, we also need to try and educate them around if there is a skill shortage, you need to look at other places that you haven't looked at before. Maybe it is the female community. I think the stat is more like 15 to 17% of the tech workforce is female. If you look at the BAME community, again, it's a similar kind of stat. Looking at that community, people in the situation that you've described as well, you know, how do we give these people opportunity? For us, it's all about how do we try an equal opportunity? How do we give it so that it's there? Equity of opportunity, I think is the right term. It's there, it's available for everyone. It's getting the word to them so they know it's there so that they can then take advantage of it. I liked your statement. The door's there, they've got to walk through it, but at least you can show them where the door is.
But how do you make it attractive for them? Here's a challenge in cybersecurity. If I am being attacked, and the people who are attacking me are targeting a specific gender or group of individuals, I need somebody from that group or that gender to understand and explain to me why that attack is successful and why the lures are attractive. When you're engaging and you're trying to build courses that will attract these groups, how do you engage? Do you go out there and do you have a council of girls from across different schools? Do you have a BAME council that brings people together to understand what it is would attract them into the training and into what you're doing? Or do you just rely on what the employers are telling you?
With the Cyber Ready program, I work together with the Department of Science, Innovation, Technology, DSIT for short. What we've been doing is working with different communities. We're running Cyber Ready up in Bradford, where I'm from, and we've been trying to increase the number of people for ethnic minorities, both male and female, to come to cyber. We've been quite pragmatic with our approach. We've been using different multi-channel advertising, all that great stuff that we know and love, but then we go down to the grassroots level, talking to community centres, going to the mosque, going to the temples, and where I've just been in a Hindu temple saying, hey, this is me, I'm from CompTIA, here's a Cyber Ready program and whatnot. We have to go down to a grassroots level, and sometimes parent power works quite well, because in some cases it wasn't a case of the individuals that were my target audience. They were the mums, the parents, the brothers and sisters. I said, oh, this sounds good for my sibling or my son, whatever. And then they were able to direct us to them. And it just goes back to this whole point of going local, going into the communities that we wish to serve, and have an honest conversation about what we can do and what we can't do. We won't boil the ocean. I'm not going to get 100% female cohort, because if the number is 6-7% at a certain point in time, or 17% in industry, then we're not going to fill up the pipeline. But what I can do is get maybe make that number go by 30-40%.
But that elder approach, be that parents, be that elders at a mosque or a temple or whatever, can often be the problem. There are cultural issues here to overcome, particularly when we talk about engaging a female audience from ethnic minorities. How do you overcome that? You can understand a parent being engaged because they see a better future for their child. But when you've got people who culturally are opposed to the engagement of certain parts of their community, or people being engaged in certain careers, that becomes a very complex thing to do. If you're out there on the front line having these conversations, what are the keys to getting these people to pull down those barriers?
It's understanding the culture. One of the things that I had recently was a young lady, the mum and wife, and she had suffered a bit of wobble on my Cyber Ready program, and this is going to sound very culturally focused here. She was upset with the fact that she felt she couldn't continue her program because she had to look after her in-laws, she had to look after her kids, look after her husband. She was the typical Asian housewife as such. After counselling, we were able to get over a wobble, keep her on program, and literally get her the right words to say and have the right conversations with the people around us. It's more about empowerment, in that it can't come from just us. We have to have the existing systems and communities focus points that can actually have those conversations on our behalf. I was lucky because this person was already on program. It's harder trying to get them on program in the first place, and that's where we have to look at the wider network.
I agree with everything Zeeshan said. People need to see somebody like them doing that job, don't they? It's really, really crucial. Oh, I can be that because look, there's someone who looks like me or has my beliefs who's doing that job at the moment. I mentioned I was in Saudi Arabia last week and I went around an academy there and they were studying cybersecurity, AI and data science. 70% of the class was female, and all the classes I went to, I went into around about a dozen different classes, 70% female participation. In a country like Saudi Arabia, where it was a mixed class, there were boys and girls in there, clearly can be done, but it does come from all areas. It comes from us, it comes from people's changing their perception and their minds about how things can be done. I think that's kind of a process that people have to go on, but I thought that was really encouraging to see that in Saudi Arabia.
It sounds it, because one of the challenges we have is that people often employ people who look like them. We've known this problem for many, many years. If we look at Europe and we look at the US, very mature markets. But you talk, Jason, about dealing with the Middle East, parts of Africa, very immature markets. Again, very culturally different markets. It goes back to what we were just talking about, challenges within culture to engaging people. In some of those African markets where we've seen security, they've also been huge hotbeds for cybercrime. How do you engage there in breaking down barriers, in terms of opening up doors? There's a huge opportunity because of the lack of maturity, but there's also a huge challenge in getting it taken seriously.
It's a really great question and one we're wrangling with at the moment. I mean, the great thing for us is my team, we have people on the ground in those countries. And that's really, really important to have that. You can't be doing this from the US and going, we think Africa needs X. It's important to have those boots on the ground in those particular countries. We also work, as Zeeshan mentioned, with governments. We work very closely with governments and government departments. In Africa, we work with the African Cyber Defense Forum. They're here today. I was just chatting to one of their team just before I came to this podcast. And it's really important to engage at all levels, the schools, colleges, to universities, all that layer of education. It's important to engage at every single level and look at the particular issues and challenges they face locally and try and come up with a local solution. Sometimes that's not always possible, but if we can take what is an international solution but localize it as much as possible, that's probably the key ingredient.
You've said exactly what we're actually doing with the Africa Cyber Defense Forum. So they literally have taken the Cyber Ready program that we run here in the UK and call it something else. I can't remember what it's called, but they've called it something else. They're running it locally and they're basically inspiring the people to move away from cybercrime. One of the things that you touched upon earlier was this whole idea of role models. You can't be what you can't see. By the ACDF taking our program, putting it out in Africa, making it available to a much larger audience, and then creating the ambassadors from that program, and they're literally giving back. So we got to also think about this ecosystem of, we've all had experience in the tech industry. The worst thing we can do is, it just belongs to me, this knowledge, and not pass it on. We've got to create that ladder to pass it on to the next generation.
Gatekeepers, bane of everybody's life. We're out of time, but before we finish, I'm going to ask you both to give me 2 points. One for students as to why they should engage, and I don't care what age that student is. Could be a mature person in an organisation, down to somebody 12, 13, 14 in a school, as to why they should engage in the idea of lifelong education. And secondly, for employers, why they need to do more and what the benefits are to their businesses.
Okay, if I start with the student first off. For me, it's about remaining relevant for the workforce and not becoming dated with outdated skills. But that lifelong learning piece, for me personally and for anyone that I ever chat to, is about how do you remain relevant and therefore employable for the long term. And that's my key message for that audience. For employers, it's about looking at, we know in tech there's a huge skill shortage. It's about trying to fish in other ponds that they don't currently fish in to try and fulfill that gap. The more progressive employers are starting to do that already and tap into areas that they've not looked at before. Others are on a bit of a journey to get there. We had the conversation earlier about reskilling folks internally rather than making huge redundancies over here and you can't hire quickly enough over there. For employers, I think they're getting it, but it's still a bit of a journey for them to go on as well. And we obviously as CompTIA are there to help them on that journey.
You said lots of great things there, Jason. When people say, what would you say to a young person? I would almost reimagine myself back in that early age, sitting in a bedroom, you know, on a Commodore 64, tapping around on bass, etc. What I remember about those days, and even now, it's fun. The minute you find out, you can go and talk to a chatbot and big woohoo. But the minute you create your own chatbot, you think, wow, I did something. That kind of fun thing, we should never take away. That's what we should always keep learning fun. Yes, it may not work out. Yes, some stumbles, etc. But always keep it fun. And that way you'll enjoy what you do. Because if you enjoy what you do, why not get paid lots of money for it? For employers, gosh, I think they need to embrace more diversity. That's the one thing I would say. Because the fact is, the more diverse workforce you have, I'm not just talking about the buckets that we talk about. I'm talking about every situation is different. All the colours of the rainbow, you know, free school meals, every single thing, every little bit of background keeps your organisation richer and hopefully will make it richer.
Zeeshan, Jason, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.